From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Are certain words off limits for you?
Oh, fudge.
Only I didn't say fudge. I said the word, the big one, the queen mother of dirty words, the F-dash-dash-dash word.
What did you say?
Canada signs off on broadcasting the F word. The break room will talk about that. But first, earlier this week, we talked with Tion Watkins, better known as T-Boz. She's the lead singer of TLC. TLC is one of the most famous pop groups of all time, and it all started in Atlanta.
That's where I learned a lot of flavor that I did in TLC when I choreographed some of our dances. I just love their swag and the whole vibe there. So I'm so happy I grew up there.
Here are your first thoughts.
Hi, my name is Regina McDuffie. I'm calling from Lazella, Georgia. I think my favorite song, of course, is Waterfalls. It has such a lasting, such a powerful message. But the best thing about TLC is that they're a lasting group.
This is Ryan Lewis calling from Athens, Georgia, from KinderCore Vinyl. We've got three vinyl presses here at KinderCore, and we've named each of them after the members of TLC. So T-Boz is a 7-inch press in Athens, Georgia.
Roy Lee tweets, "My favorite TLC song is No Scrubs because as a non-scrub male, it's funny when scrub blank dudes get called out." I don't think I'm allowed to say that on the radio, speaking of things you can and can't say. But we always want to know what you think. You can call us and tell us at 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk, or just post to Facebook and we might feature your comments on the show. You know, there have been some polls that have shown in some cases people get their news from comedy shows like The Daily Show and not from actual news shows. The Daily Show on Comedy Central for years has been where many viewers turn for the news.
From Comedy Central's World News Headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Daily Show correspondent Roy Wood Jr. joins me this morning. He is in Atlanta to perform at the Punchline Comedy Club. Good morning.
Yes, I'm here.
It's a rough time of the morning usually for comedians.
Usually. I did morning radio long enough to know how to wake up. The trick is to get up. You start your alarms at 5. Like if you need to be out the house by 7.
Really? At 5 in the morning you just keep snoozing?
I'm a 15-minute snoozer for an hour.
You set a 15-minute alarm every 15 minutes it goes off and you snooze it.
The first hour of my morning is just waking up. It's literally just my phone going off in 15-minute intervals. I need time to warm up my engine. I'm like an old car in the winter. I'm not 20 anymore. I can't just get up out of bed like a firefighter. Are you crazy?
Well, let's go right into a clip of you on The Daily Show. This is actually you commenting, and we hear your voice and Trevor Noah's. This is after the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Uh-oh. Watching what happened in Charlottesville, it only made me wonder, how are you the master race, but you so dumb?
Well, I don't understand, Roy.
Yeah, dude, Trevor, these dudes, they got a great thing going, and they're messing it up. Donald Trump's already given white supremacists pretty much everything they want. He's building the wall. He's banning Muslims. He's taking away black people's voting rights. He blocked Tyler Perry from dropping any new Madea movies.
Wait, is that true?
I mean, I hadn't seen one come out in like 3 weeks, so it's got to be Trump.
And then, of course, we got Madea in Halloween.
Yeah.
So that turned out to not be, quite be true.
Yeah.
How do you construct jokes about something as serious as the white supremacist rally where someone died and make sure that it's still funny?
The joke isn't about the incident. If the incident is horrible, then, of course, there are no jokes there within the actual incident. But there can be jokes about the people who maybe incited the incident. There can be jokes about how people reacted and responded to the incident, or in Trump's case, his lack of response immediately to that incident. So that is where you start mining comedy. It's not at the epicenter of what happened. It's in those outer rings and things that are kind of adjacent to the actual crisis itself.
But there has been this argument from some comedians that literally anything should be okay to make jokes about, that there should be no limits to what comedians say or
And I agree with that. If you're a comedian that feels like you can write a joke that is effectively and funny about a person getting hit and killed by a vehicle, then get on stage and try it. And you think it's something you can get away with without offending someone, by all means do it. I'm saying for The Daily Show and what we do, that's not what we do. Because to even find that joke and try it, it's the degree of difficulty on that, it's way easier. And sometimes it's more effective to talk about what caused this, what led up to this. Was it the city officials? Was it the lack of planning? Like, what are the circumstances that led to this happening? There may be more comedy there and more solutions that create an atmosphere of prevention. And that may be the more beneficial joke for what we try to accomplish at The Daily Show.
Well, let's hear another clip. This is you, again, on The Daily Show, where you celebrated the win for Moonlight. Moonlight won Best Picture at the Oscars. And here you are.
Stole it from La La Land.
Here you are.
Going into last night, you had Black History Month. Beyonce's pregnancy with Jay's twins. Multiple black movies were nominated for Oscars. And Frederick Douglass came back to life. Trevor, we are operating at maximum levels of blacktivity that we haven't seen in decades, better known as peak blackness.
Do you think things have changed for... You still like that joke.
Yeah, I do.
Have things changed for comedians of color? Do you think things are getting a little bit... The doors are kind of opening in ways they hadn't before?
Yeah, I think people of color across the board, if you just look at the television shows that are out right now, I think there's definitely opportunities for creators of color to do things that are not only funny, but also meaningful and have some body, a strong body of work to them. If you look at what Issa Rae is doing over on HBO.
On Insecure, yeah.
Correct. If you look at Aziz Ansari with Master of None, or even with everything that's happening with Black-ish. Black-ish to me is a great example because that show is extremely woke. That show, Black-ish, will have...
Yeah, they surprise me.
They will have a fun issue, and then the next issue will be police reform. And they figure out a way to address the issue and make you squirm a little bit in your seat while you're watching it, and that's what good comedy is supposed to do, in my opinion. And I think we live in a world now where there's also not just a change in the comedians, but also a change in the audiences, where I feel like audiences are a little more aware. I feel like your social justice sinuses have been opened a little bit in the last year and a half. So there's people that want to hear this. There's people that actually have an appetite for people who have an opinion about the world that goes a little bit deeper into issues. And I think not only are comedians changing and entertainers changing, but I feel like the people who are listening are in a state of reception that's totally different now.
I want to play a little bit from Ricky Smiley, also of Alabama. He's from Birmingham. This is somebody that you have said before is an inspiring comic for you. And so I wanted to hear a little clip from one of his performances.
Alabama in the house, where we go to church on Sundays, church on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursday, Friday, funerals on Saturdays, and back to church on Sundays. That's right. And now I joined a predominantly white church because white people get out on time.
So what for you defines a good comedian? What is it that you look for that makes somebody really great?
For me, I appreciate comedians that make you laugh even when you don't agree with them. That's what I gravitate towards. So, you know, I came up studying George Carlin and Chris Rock primarily. Like, those were kind of the 1-2 punches for me. Martin Lawrence will always have a place in my heart. I enjoy Paul Mooney, Doug Stanhope now as well these days. Ricky Smiley, I always loved, you know, not only for his style of Southern style humor and his perspectives, but Ricky was the first person, he was the first entertainer from Birmingham to blow. If there to put it bluntly, like, this was the guy I saw on cable, and of any comedian that I watched growing up, he was the one that was from my city. So that was the one that planted in my head, oh, I can do this.
Maybe I could do this for a living.
Maybe I could do this at all, to even attempt stand-up. I hadn't even attempted stand-up. I wouldn't have had the courage to attempt it if not for Ricky Smiley. Because when you're from the South, they try to make you feel like what you have to offer the world doesn't matter, or that you live in an irrelevant place. It's a little different now, but, you know, I'm talking 96, 97, where all entertainment came from the coast and maybe a little bit from Chicago. There wasn't the internet the way it is now, to where you could contribute to the world from your couch. And so to see someone from my state on television representing my state, that was huge. It was huge for me.
Well, then let's hear this from one of your colleagues on The Daily Show. This is comedian Dulce Sloan of Atlanta, proudly. I spoke with her about 2 years ago, and I asked her if she ever feels pressured to be, quote-unquote, authentically Black in her comedy. And here's what she responded.
I was doing a podcast, and someone was saying, like, oh, you know, you have this identity of, like, the sassy Black woman. And I'm like, no, I'm myself. The only people that call me sassy are white people. Black people, I'm just a Black person who talks. You know, I try to say the things that are truthful to me, and, you know, it seems to resonate with people.
So do you ever feel this pressure to be a certain kind of comedian?
No. If anything, I feel a responsibility. I mean, stylistically, you know, at The Daily Show, the thing I'm thankful for is that the producers didn't pigeonhole me into only Black stories. You know, I've covered stuff about the Army Corps of Engineers, and I've done stuff on, like, tax reform and voting rights issues. Like, there's a number of things that I've been able to talk about. But then there's times where it's a Black story and it's best addressed and approached by a Black correspondent. And to me, I take that as an honor. And, you know, my comedy stylistically is just me. So whatever you think of me, I can't control that. But I also am not going to be on a television show in a time where there are a lot of issues surrounding race affecting this country and effectively not do them because I don't want to be seen as being too Black or too woke. Man, give me all those stories. But also give me the non-race stories too, because I want to do everything, because I don't want to be seen as just the Black guy who covers the Black stuff. And thankfully the show has not done that to me, and they've given me an opportunity to cover an array of topics. I feel like, if anything, I have a responsibility. It's not a lot of Black people on TV, especially in the news satire realm. If we're counting the 10 or 11 shows that realistically address political issues on a weekly basis, there are not a lot of Black faces. So to be able to be one of the Black faces and talk about an issue from an angle that maybe a white person may not have been able to, that's pivotal to me.
That's Daily Show correspondent Roy Wood Jr. He's also a stand-up comedian, of course, and he's performing tonight and tomorrow night at the Punchline Comedy Club in Atlanta. You can get details at gpbnews.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Stick around. Roy will join us in the break room. First, though, hip-hop artist Lingua Franca of Athens adds a couple more songs to our Georgia playlist. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Let's add a couple more tunes to our Georgia playlist. For this, we ask people to choose two songs they think best represent Georgia. And there's two simple rules. Nominations have to be songs written or performed by a Georgian, and artists cannot nominate one of their own songs. Today we feature Athens hip-hop artist Mariah Parker, better known as Lingua Franca. Here are Mariah's picks for the Georgia playlist.
Hi, my name is Mariah Parker, also known as Lingua Franca. I'm a hip-hop artist based out of Athens, Georgia. My first song that I picked out for today is Wraith Pinned to the Mist and Other Games by Of Montreal. At At the time when I discovered of Montreal, you know, I was growing up in like the suburbs of Louisville, Kentucky. It's a pretty boring place. And so I was sort of daydreaming a lot of the time about getting out and other possibilities for what life could be like, as any small town kid probably has at some point. And so discovering their music and all the fantastical possibilities they really openly embrace was for me a sort of escape from my day-to-day life and like the opportunities I had available to me.
Let's pretend we're in Antarctica. Let's pretend we don't exist. Let's pretend we're in Antarctica. Let's have bizarre celebrations.
So this song sounds to me like it's a conversation between potentially two lovers or two best friends planning to escape or elope, and the musical, the instrumentation going on in the background gives a very lackadaisical, idyllic vibe. You can kind of picture these people sitting out in a field somewhere or something like that, but it describes some of the other places that they wish they could be or think they could escape to.
Let's pretend we're in Antarctica.
I think the most catching vocal line would come at the end where they sing,
maybe I'll never die, I'll just keep growing younger with you, and you'll grow younger too. Now it seems so lovely to be true, but I know the best things always do. Let's pretend we don't exist. Let's pretend we're in Antarctica. Pretend we don't exist. Let's pretend we're in Antarctica.
The bass creates this like nice little groove that kind of like gets your like head bobbing a little bit and your shoulders shaking. But then they have some like chimes and other like light floral, flowery kind of sounding instruments that come in to create this very like wispy, cool, like a summer breeze kind of sound.
Let's pretend we're in Antarctica.
I feel very inspired by of Montreal's stylings, and particularly the way they perform live, to put on a character when I get on stage and really invite people into this like other world where it's almost like realistic fiction in a way. I always try to kind of like put on a different persona and become this different person. And so I think that I got some of that from them, watching them perform live and become totally different people when they step on stage and grab their instruments. So my next pick is My Favorite Things from Andre 3000's The Love Below. It was really significant because they had really, after Stankonia, jumped onto the national scene and become like prominent figures beyond hip hop, but like also in pop music. And so I think that gave Andre a lot of license to get fully weird. I think he'd been really acclaimed within hip hop before then for like being unafraid to like do his own thing, which I always found really inspiring as like also like a fellow weird black person. And so when The Love Below came out, it was just as weird as he had gotten yet. And it was like a really fun album for that reason. They came up at a time where, you know, Atlanta rap was really making a like a claim or like a name for itself nationally, and it had a very specific sound, you know, with like Goody Mob and Killer Mike and people like that. Whereas this, I think, is a lot more playful and eccentric in terms of like really bright and jazzy, and sometimes it sounds kind of like out of this world and like a Martian kind of way, which I couldn't really think of anyone else at the time in hip hop willing to take those kinds of leaps. I I think this album's really affirming in that it reminds us that blackness takes all kinds of shapes and forms. And so his willingness to like embrace that and project that onto a national stage is something that I try to do in my own work in terms of telling these stories that are really personal and really complex, but showing that, you know, this is what hip hop can be. This is what blackness can look like also.
That was hip-hop musician Lingua Franca. She's headed off on tour and will perform at The Bakery in Atlanta this Saturday, at the World Famous in Athens next Tuesday, and at Fresh Produce Records in Macon next Wednesday. It has been a long week. I say that every week. We talked about the Atlanta mayoral race, homeless kids cheating at work. So as we do every Friday, let's take a breath, right? Let's gather a group of smart people with us and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
Students had mixed feelings about the Greek suspension on Monday. The university president felt it appropriate in light of Friday's death.
Everyone who signed up for the promotion was given a small portion of the land. That way, together, they owned it. The government would have to take them to court and fight in order to put up the wall.
I hope to make a positive impact. I don't know what it means to be complicit.
Joining us in the break room, former NPR correspondent and journalist Kathy Lohr, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and special guest Roy Wood Jr.,
Hello.
Correspondent for The Daily Show on Comedy Central. He's in Atlanta this weekend for a series of stand-up performances. Welcome, everybody. Congratulations
Good morning.
on making it to Friday. All right. Look, most people have at some point picked up their cell phone while they were driving. But Georgia state lawmakers want everyone to cut it out. A bill is being drafted to make it very expensive if you have your cell phone in your hand. The sponsor says our current texting law is ineffective, the penalties aren't tough enough, and there are too many loopholes. This new bill would forbid touching your phone. So do we think tough penalties would make people stop?
There's dead silence. Well, the other penalties didn't do anything.
They've
remember doing stories on, and they haven't done much in other states. Yeah. I think $1,000 and 4 points off your driver's license might make me think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't know the penalty was going to go up to that. I'll put my phone in the trunk.
I would have to put my phone in the trunk.
Yeah,
it's too tempting to pick it up.
Yeah, it's 100% too tempting. You're sitting at a red light. What else am I going to do? Wait for the light to turn green? Boring. I think what will happen is that as automobile companies, like they're starting to work with the heads-up displays that pop up in the windshield or whatever. That's just where all of your texting is. Like everything is going to go on your windshield, and I'm just going to be driving and scrolling through Instagram with eyes still
mine,
on
the road.
Mine,
you can't read the text. You can only hear it. Hector, you don't use your cell phone in your car, right?
All the time.
You do use it in the phone.
All the time, but hands-free.
Okay.
Hands-free. I mean, I would charge even more money.
More than $1,000.
Yeah, I would charge more. I mean, I would force everybody to go hands-free. The problem is the car companies are beginning to get rated in terms of how distracting their systems are. So chances are you're going to be purchasing a brand that is highly rated for being less distracting than a brand that is very distracting. Like Mercedes and Volvo, everybody's touching their screens, you know?
Yeah.
So,
what about you, Julianne?
Yeah, it's extremely tempting. Of course, I've done it before, but I think the statistics are really clear that something has to be done about it.
Yeah, it's really dangerous.
And this bill does have the exception for hands-free devices. And so I think it's fair.
All right.
We just have to figure out where the middle ground is. I don't think it's fair that I can't touch my phone.
Oh, you can touch it, but just not in the car.
You know, I don't think it's fair that you can't touch it because I have hands-free also. But there are times when you need it, especially if you're using a map or doing something, you might want to change the direction.
Well, they want you to pull over.
Yeah,
that.
Right.
What
All
about
right.
the cop
like
that pulls
gonna,
me over?
Like, that's going to happen.
He's got a full laptop open. You're cruising the internet.
I guess it's true right now that there's no such thing as truly and completely hands-free.
That's true.
Because there's always something screen. That you have to touch.
Yeah,
All right.
Be a point. That
so let's talk point. About something else. The F word, shall we? A four-letter word that has grown quite a bit in popularity.
Oh, fudge.
Only I didn't say fudge. I said the word, the big one, the queen mother of dirty words, the F-dash-dash-dash word.
What did you say?
It is a different time from when Christmas Story was written. Now the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Council says it's okay to use the F word on radio stations. The council ruled the word is so common at this point that it's no longer shocking or offensive anymore. Should we make the same rule change in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We're already there. I mean,
there's... Don't say it.
No, well, there are many worse words, and people are already using it. And with the, you know, the vocabulary our current president has, this beautiful vocabulary.
He's not the only one with a bad vocabulary.
Yeah, I know, but he's a role model. He's a key role model, right? So, I mean, we should all be saying it. Shouldn't be a problem.
We're getting there for sure. I mean, if you look at broadcasting standards here in America, the S word is already on cable earlier than 9 p.m. I think it's 9 p.m. or later. You can say that. And I only know this because I have to argue with the lawyers at Comedy Central about cursing in some of the segments.
Because you're not on HBO.
And after midnight, F-bombs are completely fine on basic cable on certain channels. Yeah, so we're slowly, keep in mind, America was a country where in the 50s, a man and a woman didn't sleep in the same bed during a television sitcom. Now, compare that to some of the scenes you have in a television show now. It ain't the 50s no more.
That is true.
So we'll get there, but just, you know, Canada's always ahead of the curve.
I think it's a balance. I mean, it's a balance that's very difficult to get to try to have some sort of balance between freedom and liberty and between what individuals find to be decent. Perhaps keeping liberty with maybe combining it with a system, like a rating system similar to what we have for movies.
Right, so you can
protect
your kids,
so you can protect your kids. You're not telling people that they can't do it, but at least when you pull it up on the screen for your car or whatever, you can see. Yeah, exactly.
Kathy?
I want to know why Canada basically said that it's only okay in French language stations.
Let's not say it in French either. This is public radio. We can't afford the FCC fine.
Right. I just think it's much more common, and it's more thought of as just a simple word, although I don't see American broadcasters using it in the near future without consequences.
Well, this much. It'd make the local news a lot more interesting. They could say that word.
That's true. They're saying it in their heads.
They bleep it.
Let's consider another word, complicit. We have a couple minutes to talk about this. Dictionary.com chose complicit as the word of the year. Online searches for this word are up three times as much, including during the Saturday Night Live sketch for complicit, which is a fake perfume ad poking fun at Ivanka Trump.
She's Ivanka. And a woman like her deserves a fragrance all her own. A scent made just for her. Because she's beautiful. She's powerful. She's complicit.
Okay, so if not complicit, what would be your word of the year? Kathy?
I have to go first. Narcissistic.
Interesting.
Oh, that's thoughtful.
Julianne,
I'm still working on
it. You have a different word of the year?
I do. It would be covfefe.
That's not a real word.
That's not a real word.
Hector?
Resist.
Resist. Yeah. Okay. And Roy?
Russia.
There's all a common theme here.
I should mention that the actual definition of complicit, by the way, if you're confused, as Ivanka Trump said that she was, it's choosing to be involved in an illegal or questionable act, especially when you do that with other people. That is what complicit means. So, I mean, we have like a minute left. So, Kathy, you want to explain why that would be your word of the year?
Why?
Narcissistic?
Oh, my God.
For obvious reasons.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to move on. Julianne.
Who else could come up with a word that Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood would have an entire segment on the CMA Awards for?
That's true.
Fair enough. Hector?
Some people don't think to understand what it means to resist.
What do you mean?
That there are multiple ways of doing it. So to that extent, I would appreciate, a more effective way of practicing it.
Huh, that's interesting. And Roy, you say Russia.
I like Russia because you can just blame Russia for anything that goes wrong. Like, it's like the ultimate excuse for anything. I thought we was going out. You didn't call me. Hey, baby, you know the Russians. You know,
Russians got a whole,
I didn't get your text message, baby, them Russians. Sir, you're 2 months late on your bill. When can we expect pay? Listen, them Russians. The Russians tied up my bank account. I can't even.
All right. We have couple nominations. That's actually, I'm going to use
just blame
that.
It on Russia. Anything going wrong in your life, just the Russians.
Hey, that's not a bad one.
Maggie on text says, how about collude? And Sarah Eines, one, says, word of the year should be unprecedented. You can let us know what your nominations are. You know how to reach us. It's Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about an unconventional protest over the border wall and why Atlantans are not as active as people in most other cities. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do every Friday. My guests today are Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University. Sorry about that, Hector. Julianne Thompson, a Republican strategist. Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent and journalist. And Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show on Comedy Central and in Atlanta for a series of stand-up performances. All right. We're all sitting. We have to sit. But it turns out that you may want to work out, maybe not exactly the way, say, Richard Simmons does it.
Legs should be shoulders width apart, shoulders relaxed, buns tucked under, neck is relaxed and nice and long. You should feel lifted. Think up.
All right. Well, Richard actually was on to something. Exercise, it turns out, improves your life, your health, your happiness. A Harvard report says exercise has more benefits than we ever thought before. But listen, Atlanta exercises almost less than any other city. So why don't we exercise?
It's not just Atlanta. It's a lot of the South, actually, that has the most problem with obesity and other issues.
But that's the biscuits and gravy.
It is biscuits and gravy, and it's every vegetable is fried.
Yes, that's true. Okay, Julianne?
I mean, I have to admit that I've been lazy over the past couple of months, but I did start a workout routine again at Orange Theory, and it's kicking my butt. But exercise totally changes everything in my life. When I'm not exercising, I'm not as disciplined. I'm not as prepared for things. And honestly, even my spirituality improves when I start exercising. So I think that there's something to the fact that it does change your brain chemistry.
Yeah, it makes you feel better, which makes you wonder why people don't do it. Hector, you exercise.
Yeah, religiously. It's the only thing religious in my life, actually. No, I think it's the lifestyle. I think it's too much time spent in the car, too much time spent at the office, sitting in front of the computer, not enough hedonism.
Enough hedonism.
In the culture. Yeah, well, that's the stuff, the healthy side of New Orleans, you know. They engage in hedonism. So.
Roy, do you exercise?
And like every other month, like I do it for a couple weeks, and I go, "This hurts. Why would I keep doing something that hurts?"
Because it makes you so healthy.
I know, but it hurts. You know what doesn't hurt? Fried food. Feels good going down. Plus, the game is rigged. Let's just be real about obesity in this country. There's a spot. I have a picture of it. I'll dig and find it and give it to you to post. There's a Chick-fil-A in the same parking lot as a 24-hour fitness. You can't do that to me. You can't walk me out the gym and then immediately hit me with the wonderful scents and smells of Chick-fil-A right across the parking lot. Oh, that's how they get us.
That's fair enough. All right.
As soon as you try to work out, like with the holidays, you know what they do? You work out during the holidays, and then you feel bad about it. So in January, you get a gym membership, and then in February, the McRib is back. It's the game is rigged.
That's fair enough. All right. We would love to hear from you out there. You know how to reach us. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or just find us on social media. Do you exercise? And if it makes you feel good, why aren't you doing it? All right. So let's move on to a story out of Missouri. A 14-year-old girl there was out hunting with her father, excuse me.
Whoops. All right. Whoops.
It's an honest slip there. She was on her hunting trip with her dad, and she shot what she thought was a deer. It was not. It was an elk, and it was an elk that was protected. The wildlife code forbids killing those elks. Her parents hope that conservation officials are going to let her keep the elk anyway. So there's this issue.
Wait, what? Oh,
God. Yeah, there's this issue of should she be allowed to keep the elk. And then the other thing that bothers me is there's this pretty sizable public media backlash of people who want to see the girl punished. So, Julianne, let's start with you on this. What do you make of all this?
Well, first of all, I think that the family and other hunters need some education with regard to conservation and what's a protected species and what is not. Secondly, I think that those who are shaming a child should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, you know, pick on the parents if you want to. Leave the kid alone. But as far as keeping the elk, no. She shouldn't be able to keep the elk.
No.
No.
Hector, should
you
keep the elk?
No. The elk, it's going to rot at home. I mean, even if she does something with it. I mean, she should be sent to the local zoo to learn to appreciate and respect animal life. The father, on the other hand, should be sent to counseling sessions so that, you know, on proper parenting, so that he learns a thing or two. But the people who are shaming her, they're just mean.
Yeah.
They're, of course. I mean, there's no reason.
I think
for that.
You shame a 14-year-old and say, you know, lock her away. I think the parents, if anything, I think you're correct, Hector. And I think what I understand is that the Missouri Conservation Department said they will not return any part of the animal, the skin or whatever, to the family. That is the weird part of this, that they still wanted to keep that, even with all of
which
this
shows a lack of sincerity in the mistake by the father.
Yeah.
You protect the child.
He just said he wants to pay the fine. That's
yeah,
what he had
that's
said,
fine. Pay the fine. Take her. I don't know how you hunt. I've never hunted when I was a child, but I don't know if she has like a teen learner's permit, whatever allows her to go out and hunt. Take that away, year or two. Then you know, go stare at elk and stare at deer and stare at antelope and learn the difference between all of them, so that the next time you're out there, you know what the hell you're looking at down scope.
Yeah, that's exactly what Julianne is saying. More education.
Yeah, just learn.
Elks are quite large. Okay, let's move south to Florida. Florida State University has now suspended all activities for all Greek organizations. That's because a 20-year-old fraternity pledge died at one of the parties. Here is a bit of a CBS News story about it.
Students had mixed feelings about the Greek suspension on Monday.
It really wasn't the fault of all the other fraternities.
While some thought the action was too drastic, the university president felt it appropriate in light of Friday's death.
We wish we could have saved this individual. Sometimes an accident, nothing we could do about that. But this is something we've got to address.
FSU is actually the third university to take this step. So, look, this isn't the only issue we've had in recent years with fraternities and sororities. Can we make them safer, or are they sort of a relic of the past?
Very much a relic of the past. They need to go the way of the dodo. There's no positive byproduct of Greek life that you cannot get nowadays without Greek life, especially in the age of social media and crowdfunding. And besides, the big point is, personally, I cringe at the thought of anything that hints at a herd mentality. And Greek life reeks of a herd mentality.
I think, but if we do that, then I would make the argument that we could get rid of college athletics, because there's a lot of hazing culture that happens within football, baseball, even lacrosse.
Wait,
has
you're,
some weird...
You're a Southerner suggesting getting rid of college football?
I'm saying if it's they're hazing and they don't know how to behave, then we have to shut down all cultures within college life that don't know how to behave.
Well, a few years ago, the Florida A&M marching band had an hazing incident.
And they shut the band down. The
they
band
did for 2 years.
For 2 whole years. Yeah. I'm a graduate of Florida A&M. And that whole thing, to me, with Greek culture, I think it's unfortunate. First of all, I think it's too heavy-handed. If you're going to, everybody stop, nobody do this, and we won't have Greeks ever again, I think is a bit of a stretch. I think it's an overcorrection, because I do think with regards to a lot of Greek fraternities, and I can't speak to predominantly white Greek fraternities, but I know predominantly black fraternities who have also had their issues with hazings and hazing death. Kappa Alpha Psi at Florida A&M, there was a gentleman that, it was a whole huge case.
Yeah.
Two guys went to jail over it. But a lot of fraternities do give back to their communities. A lot of fraternities do good things. There is some good that comes of these groups. I don't know how you stop.
But you can do that without a fraternity. And fraternities are not essential to college life. Sports are key to college life. But Greek influence, you know, in many aspects nowadays, it's not justifiable. There are more effective ways to accomplish in a college and a university what a fraternity or sorority does without them.
Wait, let me bring Julianne in there. We haven't heard from you yet.
Okay. No, I agree with everything that Roy said. There's not a whole lot for me to add to that, except that with regard to this particular case in Florida State, there's a little bit more to the story, given the fact that the administration has been wanting a lot of the land surrounding the university that is owned by the sororities and fraternities and their houses. I mean, if they shut them down and eventually cause them to not be able to ever be active again, they can seize those lands under a grandfathered price.
But I think they have to do something because there's so much alcohol on campus and there's so much unsupervised. There's been too many incidents,
Our own UGA has had to crack down on our partying. We're going to just for a moment, let me remind everyone, we're hanging out in the break room. With us is Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, and Kathy Lohr, a former NPR correspondent. All right. There have been a number of protests. Every president is protested in one way or another, but there's been a rise in protest groups under President Trump. And one company, Cards Against Humanity, is taking an unconventional approach to protest.
Cards Against Humanity purchased acres of land on the U.S.-Mexico border and didn't build a wall on it. They retained a law firm to fight the United States government and prevent them from ever building the wall.
So basically, you can buy these packs of cards, which sold out within, I think, a couple hours, which gives you ownership of a tiny portion of land along the border. They have hired a slew of lawyers to make it as difficult as possible for the government to express eminent domain. And my question is, what kind of protest do you prefer? Because this involves buying something, but usually it's a boycott, right? Usually a protest is not buying something. So what do you think is better?
I think all protest is disruption. And I think that is, to me, the key element of any protest that's effective or annoying. I think whether it's lying down in the freeway or whether it's taking a knee or whether it's not, whether it's financial boycotts, you're fiscally disrupting someone. So I think it to me, it's easy. If I could just buy something and be like, yeah, I protest it, that way I don't have to go and stand around. I don't know if you've ever been to a protest, but you need a lot of fluids. It's hot. It's a long day. I've been to a lot of them. So if you go, what, just send you money? All right, cool. I'll do that. And now I'm a property owner.
That's right.
I've always believed that effective protests, usually the change that results comes from money lost. There's money gained here for Cards Against Humanity. This isn't something where you're buying into a protest. They're actually making money here. So, I believe that boycotts are more effective. Absolutely.
I'm going to say the opposite. But I also think that I liked the idea of doing something proactive. And I don't remember who said this, but somebody said, if you ask me to advocate against something, I'll say no. But if you ask me to protest for peace, I'll say yes. And I think I would also want to buy that deck. So yeah, I have something, and it would be a collector's item.
You know? Interesting. It's sold
in the
out.
Future. I know. Yeah. I know.
I'm with Kathy. I mean, this is active, nonviolent form of protest. And it's using the tools of capitalism against bigotry. It's the sort of language that the system understands. So I support it 100%.
Interesting. All right. We have one last thing to talk about. This is going to be our lightning round here, although not so lightning. We've got like 3 minutes. There's another construction project here in Atlanta going on, but it probably shouldn't block the roads. It's a 9-foot statue of boxer Evander Holyfield. It will go up in front of Atlanta's Flatiron Building. It cost $90,000. It's part of the city's new multi-million-dollar investment in public art. So here's the question. If you could spend $90,000 to put up a statue of somebody, who would it be?
First, I have a question about the Evander Holyfield statue.
Yeah.
Two full ears?
Oh!
Partial.
I am not answering that, sir.
I need to talk to the designer.
Full scale.
That's just not
it's
nice.
It's a fair question.
It is.
Kathy, do you want to bring some rationale to this?
Okay, I was going to say Eleanor Roosevelt because we don't have one here and for her human rights work. But they have statues of her in Washington, New York, whatever.
They do.
So I'm going to say J.K. Rowling for her...
A Brit!
Yeah, for her work to get kids interested in reading. Plus, I love the Harry Potter books.
Me too. Okay, so...
All right.
The American Soldier. First and foremost, and also I would put
female
up...
Female or male?
Both. And...
What race?
Bronze.
There you go. And I would also feature canine soldiers as well.
Ooh.
Because I think that they are far overlooked. They're left sometimes abroad when they're finished with, and... That would also be a good way to promote more pet adoptions and saving those lives as well after they've given so much to save our soldiers' lives.
There's a really nice memorial in Guam to military dogs that everyone, if you ever get a chance to get out that way.
Coming off the headlines just this morning, the military is going to put down two dog soldiers that served in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, no. Hector, on that sad note, who would you build a statue to?
A homeless Atlantan. Preferably an African-American male, like the ones I see each time I walk through campus in downtown Atlanta. That's what I would have.
Okay, you're going to make people pay attention?
That should shame the local government enough.
Okay, Roy?
I'm going to go with Joe Rogers, who is co-founder of Waffle House. Okay. Which is a Georgia institution.
It is.
And it's expanded all over the South. And I don't think Joe knows how many people he's fed at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night after last call. And the man is a hero. And he's given us all a place to sober up before we text something stupid to an ex-girlfriend.
That's an honest and
he is
honorable.
A hero. He's modest. I don't even think his picture's up in the restaurant. This is a low-key dude who deserves some acclaim.
Recognition.
And you would put that right in the middle of downtown Atlanta, I assume.
Yeah, but you could only go to it at night. Like, you have to.
Would you bring food offerings?
Yeah.
Waffles. Belgian waffles.
It's the hash browns that you use. Yeah. The hash browns.
And it'll be little, like, way too tight booths right next to it where you can sit.
All right. We are out of time. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and a special thanks to Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show, and he's in Atlanta this week for a series of stand-up performances at the Punchline Comedy Club. You can get more details on that at our website. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.